It's time for the Rose Chat Podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating the world's most beloved flower, the rose. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleef and Teresa Byington as they chat with rose lovers and experts from around the globe. With each episode, you'll gain valuable knowledge and insights to achieve the rose garden you've always dreamed of. Listen now as we explore the world of roses.
Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Easy to brew and use on all indoor and outdoor plants. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Hey, garden friends. Dr. Alan Armitage, who is better known as Dr. A, is with us today. He's a well-known writer, speaker, and horticulturist. He's worked with plants in the landscape and greenhouse crops in both the North and the South. And he's here today to share about plants and plans he's excited about for the upcoming growing year. And oh yeah, he has a brand new book. Hey, Dr. A, welcome back to Rose Chat.
Well, good afternoon, and it certainly is my pleasure to be with you and all your fans. I just, you know, it's so much fun just to share what we do, and I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, we're thrilled to have you and to learn from you. Now, first of all, you live in the South. I do not. And so you get started much earlier than I do. And then I have that whole period of time where I'm kind of pea green with envy. But tell us what you do. What's going on in your garden now?
Well, I live in north part of Georgia, sort of the foothills of the Smokies. So we do have four seasons. I am in Georgia, of course. It's not exactly Wisconsin, but we have four seasons, which is wonderful. Of course, as most you know anyway, and maybe others are not aware of, I'm originally from Montreal, Canada, so I know what you're going through, believe me. And in fact, I just today, in fact, I think my latest newsletter came out, which you can get by just following me. And I was saying how much when I lived in Montreal, I envied those in the South for their long growing season as we trudged around the snow in the winter. And now I'm in the South and I have a nice long growing season. I love winter even more because we get cold, we get snow, but it doesn't last long. So like today we're running around, we've been in the late high 20s, low 30s at night, but we'll get up in the 40s and the 50s during the day. And oh my goodness, it's just great. So what's going on in my garden? Well, it's raining today, so not much, but I'm working out there. It's lots of cool things happening right now.
So what are some of the first tasks that you do in the garden?
Well, to let people understand, I have a very small garden, which, you know, when you talked about all your garden crazy people out there, they all want bigger gardens. Well, we downsized. We had a pretty nice garden, big and all that kind of stuff, but we're right in town now. And so my garden is a kind of a 60 by 100, just regular old residential lot. But, oh, I have it crammed with so many things. And so I can do a lot of things pretty quickly. You know, if I'm weeding every now and then, when I weed, I'm not weeding all day because the garden isn't that big. But I have a lot of stuff going. So what I just am doing today, well, yesterday actually, is we are very fortunate that we have a landfill that does really good job on composting. So I have, I get a pickup truck load of compost. It costs up to $20 and actually usually less. And I have just been putting some compost in my garden. It's really well done. It doesn't stink or anything, and it's great. And I do that every single year in early spring so that the soil eventually actually kind of looks like soil because we have very hard, heavy clay here. And so that really helps. That's one of the things that I tell people. I do a whole series called Common Sense Gardening, Teresa. And this gardening thing we made so darn complicated, it really isn't complicated at all. Put a little compost on, you'd be surprised what happens.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, but I'm so envious that you have a local source
easy. One pickup load for $20, what's that, five bags or something at the box store? And so, yeah, we're very fortunate. We can do it. and we take advantage of it. And if you have the opportunity, you know, if you live near areas where there's, you know, horse manure or cow manure, that's black gold. So just do the best you can to get some of that stuff on the garden.
You know, I've seen your garden and in pictures, and it just looks so much bigger. So you do have a lot of fun stuff in there.
Well, there's this saying, and again, I, you know, I love good design. I'm no good at it because I'm always trying to find a place to put the sucker. But but I learned from a designer long ago that, and his famous saying was, if you divide a garden in half, you multiply it by two. In other words, if you find, you don't look at the whole thing at once. And so that's what I've done. I've sort of got sections in the garden. And again, it's small, you know, my section is essentially front and back, but it looks much bigger as you go through it. And of course, the other thing I do, which I'm not sure, you know, anybody who is a supposed expert would probably disagree with me, is I cram a lot of plants in my garden. I don't ever look at this spacing thing of 2 feet or 1 foot. My goodness gracious me. It starts with a ground cover. I put something through the ground cover. Then I put something else beside what I put through the ground cover. And so there's not a whole lot of place for weeds. And there's a ton of space for joy and for, you know, surprising you when things do so well. And of course, surprising you when they don't. But
no, I love the whole cramming process. You know, my garden's 30 some years old. And so the biggest problem I have is, you know, maintaining a pleasing design and cramming it full of all the things I love.
Yeah. Well, I did a talk for American Landscape People, you know, a great group, and they're all about design and landscaping, you know, so they're covering this or making that. And my shot was, here's some great plants that'll help your design. Whether or not, you know, we'll talk about plants in a little bit, which plants I would recommend for my daughters, for example. But the design to me is something pleasing to you. So I don't design for anybody else in mind but me. And, people seem to like it, but I'm not out there designing anything. I'm out there putting in plants like a fabulous golden Aurelia. So, you know, what do I know about Aurelia? I just know this is a great plant and it gives me that golden color, which the eye goes to. And then, you know, I go from there. So, believe me, I don't know anything about what I do. I just do it. And I have so much fun doing it. You know, one of the things that people are saying to themselves, well, you just can't cram stuff in, because what about those things that want to go crazy, like anemones and things like that? Life goes on. I take some out, give them to neighbors, or, you know, we figure it out. So it's all common sense.
That's one of the things I love about your garden when we get to see it, when you film there, is that, you know, you do have some things that are very beautiful, but also kind of invasive. So you take risk and chances with the things that you love. And I love that.
Well, I hopefully don't have anything that's invasive. That's another thing. Let's make sure, again, please just cut me off if I babble too much here, Teresa, but there's a huge difference between aggressive and invasive.
There you go.
I don't think I have anything invasive. I don't have anything that's going to the woods. I don't have anything taking over where it shouldn't be. But I certainly do have some aggressive plants. You know, you never will find me putting a wisteria in, for example, because it goes everywhere. At least the mm-hmm. you know, our native one is fine. You'll never find me putting in something that's going to, you know, a privet that's going to go into the forest or the woods. But I certainly have plants that I'm cussing and cursing sometimes. I love them. I just mentioned anemones. I love them. They're not nearly as aggressive here as they are further north. But, you know, still, I'm still digging stuff out. You know, my saxifraga or my, you know, the strawberry begonia or whatever we call those things. They're fabulous and they go wherever they want to go, but they're a ground cover. I let them just cover the ground. So there are things like that that truly that we got to make sure people understand it.
Yes.
Invasive is a no-no. Aggressive is a bad back.
Well, that's so true. The bad back part. That's so true. So you mentioned a few plants already, but we want to hear about some, give us some ideas on plants that you think are great. And maybe we're going to think they're great too.
Okay. Well, So oftentimes I think, you know, I mean, people always want to know what's the next greatest plant. Well, heck if I know. But there's a few plants that my neighbors, and again, I really do a lot of stuff with just people. And I have a whole lot of born again gardeners because they actually think I know something. And I tell them this is really a whole lot simpler than the books make it out to be. So my daughters, who are young ladies with kids and no money and no time and jobs and stuff, they like this gardening thing, but they're not crazy as their dad. They just want to know something that works. So here's my, now, I don't know how far north does your audience go here, Teresa?
All the way. We're international, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, then this is covering a whole lot of ground, but people in zone two may not be able to do a whole lot of things with Japanese maples. All right. This is my go-to small tree or big tree, depending on what you want. Japanese maples offer everything from colored bark, golden, red, fabulous spring foliage, fabulous fall foliage, a place for birds to make their nests. And they don't go anywhere. I mean, they get bigger, but you can get dwarf forms, you can get short forms, and you can get, of course, tree forms, and you can get those that are pendulous and those that are up. Anyway, it is my go-to first kind of small plant for my kids' garden. And we're in zone 7, 8, I don't know what we're in here. But the fact is it goes all the way to 4. And I love Japanese maples as my go-to. My one love is called Bijou, and it has a golden bark, and it's beautiful. But there's a ton of them. And again, I don't mean to say if you don't, you know, and we'll talk about natives in a while. This isn't native, obviously, but it's a great plant. And there's, so that's my little doodad for if you want a small tree, that's where I would go. If I want to have some new perennials that I'm looking at, well, the world is now stuffed full of purple coneflowers, echinacea. And so you have to sort of, you know, you don't have to do anything, but I try to figure out some that are a little bit better than others. I'm fortunate in that I see enough of these plants in my travels and whatever. I know that I'm going to go with a sombrero series. It's not new, but there's new ones all the time coming out because the sombrero series stays, you know, calf high at best. It's just not a tall one. There's lots of colors. It doesn't get a lot of mildew or anything else on it. But there's some new ones in echinacea, one called Kismet, K-I-S-M-E-T, which I'm also very enamored with because it's beautiful. Kismet white is probably the best white I've ever seen. And it does well. If you do well with echinacea. So if I talk about a plant, my sort of limitation is if you do well with echinaceas, here's some that I would recommend. If you want a no-brainer on foliage and as a perennial, a no-brainer, then there is a ton of work that is being done on carex, the sedges. There are native sedges, which the landscapers love, the native plant people love for remediation work. And then there's sedges that are just so spectacularly beautiful in the garden. My very favorite one is called Feather Falls. I don't know if I'm getting too specific here, Teresa, but there's a lot of great carex out there, and it's pretty tough to kill these things. I mean, we can do it, but they tolerate lots of shade. They tolerate full sun. They tolerate almost anything. And so I have those, you know, that have golden foliage, variegated foliage, and various other types of foliage. Everillo is another one of my favorites, and that's a golden one. It's not necessarily new, but this whole movement to carex just makes sense for my kids and makes sense for anybody that wants to have something they can look at and easy to grow. So there's a few. I mean, I can go on forever here. You just tell me when to stop.
Well, go ahead and give us a couple of more because, you know, we've got spaces we need to fill.
Oh, my goodness gracious me. Well, if you got spaces, so let's do shade. And again, I'm sort of talking about some of the things that you're hearing a lot about. But I think advances in breeding for the gardener and landscaper are just fabulous. And one of them is with Lenten Rose. With the hellebores. Now, The old hellebore that you have and most people have is Helleborus orientalis. That's the Lenten rose, and it's been around forever. It reseeds. It's really quite something. But it's prone to a particular bad disease now called Black Death. It's actually a virus slash fungus, and it's becoming a real issue for people who have a lot of this. So one of the newer ones, there's a couple of new ones I really like that has spectacular flowers. They have flowers that are upright as opposed to hidden by the foliage, and they don't reseed anywhere. So they're more of a landscape plant rather than a ground cover plant. And two I'm going to mention to you. One is called Frost Kiss, and the Frost Kiss series has about, let's say 10 different cultivars. But what makes them quite unique is they have variegated foliage. So they have thick, leathery, variegated foliage that look good all season. The flowers in the spring, and they're very early, by the way, are spectacular. They're upright. They come in all sorts of different colors. Penny's Pink is one of the ones, and that's one of the newer one, or older ones, I should say. But you can't go wrong in that. They're a little more expensive, of course, but they're also going to last a long time. And the other series I'll mention in hellebores is one called Ice and Roses. And they have a number of colors there. These are straight up, right? These are true landscape plants. And when they flower, and for us, they're going to flower anytime. As soon as it gets a little warmer, they're going to start flowering. They're that early. So there's another one that's good. The native ones, like there's some phlox out there that are spectacular. I just can't get enough of phlox. Our native grasses, the panicums, they are taking over from miscanthus because miscanthus is actually becoming invasive. So, there's just, we'll just have a 3-hour talk, Teresa.
Yeah. Well, we do have a lot of our listeners are very interested in cut flowers in their garden. There's just been a real movement to have, that cut and bring in a type of desire that people want to know, what are some really good cut flowers that we're going to get flowers from all year long with, not have to spend a lot of money, but have something beautiful. So tell us a little bit about some cut flowers.
You're quite correct, of course. If you ask me what trends are happening out there, that's certainly one of them. People are rediscovering flowers that are useful. Well, they've always been useful for cuts, but rediscovering the value of a cut flower. They can take to their neighbors instead of a bottle of wine. They can put in a vase. They can just enjoy it. And we'll talk about books and all, but I've done a book on specially cut flowers, and it's just gone crazy lately because, as you said, everybody remembers that flowers can be cut. But anyway, having said that, what are some great cut flowers? Well, of course, I don't have to talk to you. You know everything you just know about roses, but roses are top of the list on many people's list of cut flowers. But so are annuals like celosia. So are annuals like sunflowers. So are perennials like astilbe. All of these work as cut flowers. Phlox. So when we talk about cut flowers in this book I've done, and other people, you can find this stuff online, of course, but when do you cut them for the longest vase life? Well, if vase life isn't an issue, i.e. you're going to entertain tonight, I'm going to go get some flowers, who cares if they fall apart tomorrow, then it doesn't matter. Cut them full open. But if you're sort of taking some plants to the flower market, and many, many people have discovered, the florist or the flower markets or the farmers markets, I could say, for their communities, there's always cut flowers there. Well, you're going to cut those a little bit tighter, and you're going to put a proper solution in the garden, which is really easy to find, a floral preservative, and they that works. So, if I'm cutting phlox, I know they're not going to last very long. I probably won't take too many of those to the farmers market unless I know that they're going to go that day and be used that night. But my goodness, what I can do with, maybe I can grow some eustoma, or maybe I can take hellebores, for example. They'll last forever. Maybe I can take some of the alliums that are growing as bulbs in my garden and do those. And so there's a ton of great cut flowers. Just tell me what you want to do. If you can grow ranunculus and anemones, boy, you got great cut flowers there.
You sure do. There's some new, I didn't get any last year. I don't know if I missed when they were in the garden centers, but the Cut and Come Again sunflowers and Rudbeckias, there were just some new things out there that I was hearing about, but didn't actually get my hands on.
Well, I tell you what, the sunflowers, there are some sunflowers, and I'll mention just one or two varieties of sunflowers that I think you might like. They're one called Suncredible. So the sunflower is the sun part, and these are Cut and Come Again. Suncredible, Sunfinity. You can get these now in local garden centers, and they're great garden plants. They're kind of somewhat lanky, but if you want a cut flower, my gosh, it won't run out of cut flowers on those. And you mentioned like Rudbeckia. Well, there are some wonderful Rudbeckias for the garden that are also just quite wonderful for cut flowers. And I'm going to just, again, I'm sorry, I'm just going to recommend a couple here that I think you might like. They're fairly new. One is called American Gold Rush. So these are like the old gold sturm, but they're better. They're much more disease resistant. They are just easy to grow. American Gold Rush is one of them. And another one that I like, and there's five or six I like, but another one I like is called Glitters Like Gold. So they both have the term gold in them. And there's a few of them out there that I think if you're looking for a great cut flower and a great garden, because that's what we want. Unless we're going to be a farmer and we're going to grow cut flowers for a living, we also would like them to be ornamental in our garden. And these are certainly ones that I just wouldn't be without.
Oh, I'm definitely going to be looking for those early on, so I don't miss them this year.
Yeah, and you'll find them hopefully in your local garden center. But there's good online places that I can let people know about if they want.
Absolutely. Well, you'll probably mention some of these things in your newsletter. So our friends need to go to alanarmitage.net, not .com, .net, and there you can sign up for the newsletter. So you'll be getting real-time information from Dr. A. Now, a lot of people have found you with your walkabouts. Are you going to be doing walkabouts? Well, first tell our listeners about your walkabouts, and then are you going to be doing them this year?
Okay. So the walkabouts, I've kind of done walkabouts for many, many years, and they're just a walk around the garden. And so when I would give a talk in, Cincinnati or Denver or whatever, I would also say, if anybody wants to come, if you want to come around with the garden with me, I'll tell you stories. It turns out that I'm more of a storyteller, Teresa, than anything else. So I'll tell you when we see a plant, whether it's a good plant, whether I like it as a good plant, what I think it does and how it got its name or what we can do with it and stuff like that. So I do walkabouts. Now since COVID, I've done walkabouts in my own garden and in other gardens as well. And that's on essentially Facebook Live. So again, if you follow me, you could do that. But we really are, and they're great fun. And you've seen them, a couple of trees. I did my garden. I've done a few gardens around here. They were just fun for me to do during COVID where you couldn't go anywhere. People couldn't come see me. So we just got together with this walkabout idea. And we are definitely going to do it this year. And again, if you follow me and go to my website and all that kind of stuff, I'm going to do a walkabout, and we're going to actually advertise them, so to speak, let you know where I'm going to be doing them and when. But for whenever I'm invited to give a talk, if they want you to give a talk, let me know. I'm going to do a walkabout in a garden in that area. So certainly I'm going to be doing Athens, Georgia, of course, because that's where I live. I'm going to be doing Memphis, Tennessee. I'm going to be doing Cincinnati, Ohio. I may be doing one in Holland when I go there. So, and we're going to sort of put these as a program. They're going to be the Monty Don of walkabouts in the United States here. So why not? I mean, why not? It's just fun. It doesn't take a whole lot of, takes me telling stories. So anyway, definitely going to be doing them. And Teresa, I know that you'll spread the word because they're just so much fun.
Well, they are so much fun. It's the real stuff. You know, you're seeing real time, getting information from the person who did the growing and did the purchase, keeping up with it. It's just really, really fun. Now, you said that you were a good storyteller. And oh, is that true. Now we're going to talk about some of your gardening books because I want to make sure our listeners know about them because they're fantastic. But I want to talk about this new book. It's The Tales of Big John. Now that didn't sound much like a gardening book.
No, it's so all of these people who are all of the people who are listening, you know, most of them I assume are gardeners, but also a great majority of them are parents. And so when your young child since a young child does something really makes you laugh, even though it drives you crazy, but later you're having a glass of wine, you're laughing about it, and your friends are coming over and they're telling you stories about what their kids have done. Well, we all have those stories. The only difference between your stories and my stories is that I wrote them down at the time. So this book called Tales of Big John and Other Creatures, Jonathan is my eldest, is my son. He's actually my youngest. My other creatures are his two sisters. So I wrote these crazy stories down. So this book that just came out this year, well, it came out in 2021 in the fall, is essentially, 45, 50 years old as far as the stories are concerned. But it was fun for me to do it just because I've always had these stories. I gave some of these stories to the girls when I got married and things like that. But I put it in a book. It's a small book. It's a fun read. And it's Irma Bombeck, you know, times Dr. Seuss.
What a great, that is so true. I haven't heard anyone mention Irma Bombeck in years, but there you go. I used to laugh out loud at her articles, and now I'm doing the very same thing as I make my way through Tales of Big John.
People are really enjoying. And the other thing, as I mentioned to you, Teresa, there's part of the profits of this book goes to a really great organization called Extra Special People. And, just people with Down syndrome and kids with various problems. And we have a wonderful organization. And so part of the profits go to them as well. So any book that's sold helps them as well. So I'm really happy about that. And people are buying, more than one or two books at a time so they can give them to their aunts or uncles and their friends because it makes you laugh. And at this time of our lives, though, don't we need a laugh or two?
We do need a laugh or two. And friends, I'm telling you, this book would be good for anyone, whether you're a grandparent, a parent, or a brand new parent. He's got some really good ideas. He was very creative in how he handled some difficult situations. So you're not only going to laugh, but you're going to say, oh yeah, I think I'm going to write that one down.
It may be a little scary, Teresa, for brand new parents. I don't know.
Well, maybe brand new. You're hitting the terrible twos. Yeah, this book's for you.
We all have them. As I said, the only difference is I happen to write them down, and I can't make up this stuff, as you can believe when you read it.
It's so good. It's so good. And that it's helping a special organization like Extra Special People. Well, that does make it extra special. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, we have to talk about your books. You have a bunch of them. I don't know, 17, 18 or so. And they're all wonderful books. But, you know, we talked a little bit about the book Specialty Cut Flowers, which is excellent. Mm-hmm. But another favorite of mine that I want you to talk about is Of Naked Ladies and Forget-Me-Nots.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I sound like a particularly nice person. I got naked ladies. I got creatures. But anyway. So it's interesting. It's called Of Naked Ladies and Forget-Me-Nots, How Plants Get Their Common Names. So, you know, why is there somebody called Joe Pye? I mean, was there anybody called Joe Pye, or is that just some kind of weird name? I mean, why is a dogwood called a dog? It has nothing to do with dogs. I mean, what is a resurrection lily and its other name for a resurrection lily is naked ladies. Is it? Where's that come from? So all of these things, and why does your mother tell you to still eat carrots, for your eyes? I mean, where did that come from? So that's what this book is about. It really is a book of stories of plants that just, again, will make you laugh, will make you tell stories, because half the fun of listening to a story is telling it to somebody else. And that's what I really love doing. So that's been a very, very popular book as well. Yeah, Naked Lunch.
It's a great one. It's a great one. And there's one more that I want you to talk about today, and then our friends can go to the list and see the others. But talk a little bit about Legends in the Garden.
Yeah, okay. So here I am at a garden center, Teresa, and you'd appreciate this, and all your other people would. And I'm overhearing, and I don't mean to eavesdrop, this lady says, and where we live, she said, I want an evergreen shrub that I can make into kind of a hedge. And, you know, I want some fruit so the birds can come, but I want it fast growing. And the fellow said, well, one of your best plants would be hollies. And he mentioned one that he really liked, and it was called a holly called Nellie Stevens. And he talked her into this, and she bought a half a dozen. And as she was leaving, she said, by the way, who was Nellie Stevens? And I go, he had no idea. So that was just sort of in my back of my brain when it happened again. But I was somebody, and again, a garden center, and she wanted a hosta. She wanted a variegated hosta that would be fairly big, would be lovely, wouldn't be too expensive. And he says, well, here's the one for you. And and I think you should try Francis Williams. And she did, and she said the exact same thing. Who's Francis Williams? He had no idea. So these are people. Who's Betty Corning? Who's Francis Williams? Who's Nellie Stevens? Who are all of these people we grow, you know, they're in our garden, and it's called Who Does Your Garden Grow? It's sort of be a subtitle. And I think, you know, we actually went and interviewed or found some of the families, and, you know, many of them are passed away, Nellie Stevens and, of course, Francis Williams. We talked to Francis Williams' granddaughters, and they almost broke into tears that somebody would tell the story of their grandmother. I mean, she is the most famous hosta in the entire world. So the stories are, how did these hostas come around? And her story of that hosta was really quite interesting. Well, they're all interesting, quite truthfully. And I think people love those stories because they, you know, it's part of our history. Not that I want to become a historian, but gosh, why would we forget these people? But we are forgetting them unless somebody writes them down. So that's what I've done. I think there's 60, I don't know how many stories there are in there. But anyway, it's a great book, and it's still out there, and it's still getting great reviews.
Well, I'm so glad that you've written these down. Stories are just a big part of my gardening experience, and our friends have probably heard this story before, but one of the roses in my garden is Francis E. Lester, and Francis E. Lester was a great rosarian. He started his life in England and loving roses, and then made his way to California. And started a garden center in California, Roses of Yesterday and Today. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't get the roses that he wanted because of, you know, there were some issues with bringing things into the country. So he scoured the countryside and found roses. And he wrote a sweet book called My Friend the Rose. And I just fell in love with the book and his story. And early on in my gardening world, I contacted Roses of Yesteryear and Today, and some of my roses came from there. So just got to know the person, Francis E. Lester. And so then there was I think it was in a David Austin catalog, that in their gardens, they had the Francis E. Lester rose. So I had to have one, and I do. And so on my blog, I wrote about Francis E. Lester and his book and his rose and, you know, got comments from people. But several years after I wrote the article, I got an email from a lady. She was in her mid-80s, and she was thanking me and thanking me and thanking me. And she said, I grew up in California, and my dad and Mr. Lester were best friends. My dad was the town doctor, and I grew up in Francis' garden, and I thought no one remembered those days.
I tell you, these stories are unbelievable. And, you know, there's so many stories out there. You know, Lady Banks rose. I mean,
yes.
Okay, who's Lady Banks? Well, of course you were. I mean, these things are,
yes.
You know, when you talk about, Cecile Bruner. Look at these fabulous roses out there that have been around forever, some of these things, but nobody knows where they come from. And anyway, but I love talking about roses too, and I'm all over roses. I just don't have enough space for the roses I'd love to have. But I don't know if you looked at that series called Brindabella yet, Teresa, but that's going to be a good rose.
Oh, it certainly is. I'm very excited about that one, for sure.
Fragrance and cleanliness, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But anyway, I love all of these stories, and that's when I've become a storyteller. I'm asked to speak here and there, and more often am I asked to make sure I have a second talk on stories. You know, everyone wants to know about plants, and that's great. I enjoy doing that. But it's so much fun. Actually makes people think you know something when you tell them a story.
So fun to have you today, and I thank you for taking the time, and thank you so much for making gardening fun, and now you're even making raising kids a little bit more fun.
Well, don't forget to mention to your group that if there are any of these books or apps or any of that kind of stuff I do, you can get them through your with that Rose Chat coupon, and I'll be happy to add or to make postage free of charge for any of my books, the ones we've mentioned or any of the other ones on there, because heck, if your audience could put up with us, they ought to get a bonus.
That's so true.
I think Rose Chat is the coupon code when you decide to let people know about this, and any of my books can be had through there for a bit of a.
Well, thank you so much. And to our friends, we're so glad you're here too. Don't forget to go to alanarmitage.net, take a look at the books, and if you use the code ROSECHAT, you get free shipping in the U.S. And while you're on the site, go ahead and sign up for the newsletter. It's great information, so you don't want to miss that. So wherever you are, whatever the weather, happy gardening until next time, or maybe happy garden planning.
Happy gardening indeed.
You've been listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington, expert rose gardeners who want to help you achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Don't miss an episode. Listen anytime on our website at rosechatpodcast.com, or listen on the go via the Rose Chat app on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Share this podcast with your social networks and join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using the hashtag RoseChat. Join us next time for another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. The Rose Chat Podcast is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.